Hey, how you doing?
Oh.
This is bum ba bum bum ba ba.
That was actually really good. We're both like so surprised.
This is our Halloween episode.
Do you think you could recreate that?
Nope, never. Never.
Oh shit, it is our Halloween.
Yeah.
No, it's not. Is it?
Yes.
Oh, that's right. Okay, yeah. No, I knew that. Yeah, I got it. I was going to say, all my story isn't about Halloween. It's only about Halloween. I remember now.
Keep that mic close to your mouth, girl.
Oh, my God. It's practically touching my lips.
So, how's your week?
It's been a very long week.
Okay.
Because not only is it our Halloween episode, so I had to like find a story specifically for Halloween.
Yeah.
But by the time this comes out, your birthday will have already passed. But yeah. I was also getting your birthday shit together.
You don't need to. It's
well,
okay.
I already did.
We're not celebrating this year. It's a leap year. That's how that works, right? Get to leap over one of your birthdays.
I never understood the leap year, so sure. That's what you say, sure. Do you just stay the same, or do you get to pick your age?
I get to pick it. For the next year, I am 24 years old.
Ooh, 24?
Yeah, it gives me a lot of leeway to be a douchebag and just...
Does it?
Yeah.
I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm fresh out of college. Master's.
At 24? Yeah, I'll say, are you a doctor?
Yeah.
So yeah, my week has been very busy. How was your week?
My week was busy as well.
Good talk. We're on fire tonight.
Maybe we should just get into our stories.
No, what are we doing tomorrow that I'm so excited for?
Go on, pumpkin picking.
Why are you so sad?
Didn't get lost in a corn maze. Because they had those damn horse pony rides.
Oh, is that really why you're sad?
I'm not happy about it. Well, I also don't like kids. But I'm not happy about the horse pony rides.
I'm more concerned, yeah, about the children.
Yeah. What is this, a holiday for kids?
Get out of
no.
here. No, there's going to be a lot of little
what was that
angels.
Word? A lot of little angels.
But I'm excited to find a pumpkin and to do the corn maze.
You think some parents would be taking their kids to that? Because this corn maze that we're going to is the corn maze for LA. I don't know if you've looked it up.
No, I haven't. Because you got all upset when I said, like, let's go to a pumpkin patch on Saturday. You were like, well, ruin my surprise.
Yeah. Well, it's huge. Like, it's enormous. There's actually a map to get through
it. We're not using a map.
Well, that's what I was going to say. Do you think parents take their kids out there and then just kind of like, oh, go do the corn maze?
Oh, my gosh. I was going to do a story, like a short scare at the corn maze, but there's not enough. It's not really scary and there's not enough info, but I'll tell you it really quick right now. It's about a corn maze. A mom left her child in the corn maze overnight.
Overnight?
Like, they went into the corn maze. She left. The child was still in the corn maze. She went home. She went to bed. She put the rest of her children to bed. Some other couple found this child like wandering and crying. They couldn't get the kid to like say what his name was. They had to call Child Protective Services who came and got him. Then the mom went back, I think, to the corn maze the next day. It was like, pretty sure I forgot my kid here. So she had to go like pick him up from like Child Protective Services.
Wow.
And when she showed up, she had 10 other kids. So then I was like, okay, I get it.
10 kids? So she had 11 kids total? That's too many kids.
That's a lot of kids.
By
11. You know what happens when you have that many kids?
You forget one of them in a corn maze. Yeah, I'm with you.
Isn't that sad though?
I want them to have come back and he's like learned to weave baskets out of
he's
the corn
like part
husks
of like the circle circus or whatever they have yet to be to a good corn maze, obviously. Don't they have like haunted houses and stuff in some of them too?
I don't think in the corn mazes.
Well, not in the corn maze, but I mean in the
pumpkin patch.
Was it a fair? The pumpkin patch, yeah.
Yeah, there's some that they do. Haunted hay rides.
Haunted hay rides. That's
not this
right.
one though.
Good, because then you're not stoked to deal with the kids.
No.
I don't really want to deal with like teenagers.
Yeah.
Which leaves us a very small window of time to go.
We have gotten old and grumpy.
We're bitter. We're super bitter. We have gotten old. I like how you included that.
You're right, baby. You have gotten old. I
it's
look
your birthday.
Fantastic.
According to your birthday week. No, it is not.
What do you got for us tonight?
Okay, I'm going first. Candyman Killer.
The Candyman Killer?
To
this
you?
Is the person who killed the Candyman?
Yep, you'll find out. Brought to you by the nydailynews.com. Sorry, I feel like I really need to burp.
You are.
You can go ahead and cut all this
out. Super sexy. You know
you
I never
just
do.
Burped before we started this.
I never burped in my life.
It's not going to come out. Okay, here we go.
I'm sure it'll come out in the middle of your story.
As I'm like mid-word.
Be like, that tastes just, like.
Ew, stop it. I'll be Elf. Did you hear that?
Did you hear that?
I'll do it right into
the mic.
It's
my favorite part of that movie.
It's so good. Okay, here we go. Halloween. Are you ready?
Yeah.
Don't be grouchy.
Okay. I'm not. Let's do it. Halloween, I'm spooktacularly
okay,
ready.
Here we
okay,
go.
Here we go.
So kids have been trick-or-treating on Halloween for decades. Dressing up in costumes, knocking on the doors of strangers, taking their loot home, and pigging out on sweets. And Halloween night for the O'Brien family in 1974 started like all the others had. Sidebar, while you yawn, how old were you when you stopped trick-or-treating?
Oh.
Were you one of those, like, 15-year-olds who's at the door?
No. I stopped pretty early, actually.
Oh, really?
Yeah. That's all I have to say about that.
Okay.
My last costume was Indiana Jones, and I was probably in fourth or fifth grade.
I don't know how old of
so
fourth.
So 10. Or... 10. What
I
about you?
I don't think that's early. Isn't that when? I feel like by 12, most kids are done.
Okay. What about you?
I think around the same time. I would say 10 or 11.
Okay. I do remember throwing a, when I was 12, because I moved to a new school. That year, and I threw a Halloween party, and I was a Three Musketeer, not candy bar, one of the Musketeers.
But with friends, or you were just
no, I was by myself. But I mean, I had friends there. But I just remember, like, it was a transition from elementary school to middle school, and the girls I invited were all older, and they
look
came,
at you.
And I think I and like my mother, the rest of my family, they all thought it was going to be like. Elementary school type party, and these girls were dressed in very little
your
clothing.
Typical Halloween.
It was, yeah.
Skankiness.
Nobody knew what to do.
You're 12.
So, yeah.
Nice. Moving on. So the family sat down for a meal over at their friend's house, a Mr. and Mrs. Bates, along with the Bates' children. And the O'Brien kids, who were Timothy, aged 8, and Elizabeth, 5. Shortly after the meal was finished, the two dads left the Pasadena, Texas home with 3 of the 4 children so that they could do some trick-or-treating, even though it had already started to drizzle outside. The Bates's 5-year-old daughter stayed behind with the moms.
Why?
I don't know.
She's a girl?
Find out. The other daughter is with them, Elizabeth, the other 5-year-old.
Okay.
Don't be like that.
I'll listen better.
The friend, Mr. Bates, would hang back on the sidewalk while Ronald Clark O'Brien would go up to the front doors with the kids. The children were so excited to trick-or-treat that they approached a dark house. So generally speaking, if a porch light is on, they're giving out candy. The kids decided to risk it and knocked on the door of the house anyway. No one answered. So after a minute, they moved on to the next one. Mr. Bates strained his eyes to keep track of the children in the darkness as he saw the kids were working their way down the street, but that O'Brien was no longer with them. The man quickly glanced around and found O'Brien coming off the porch of the darkened house the kids had been at a few minutes ago. He was now carrying 5 oversized pixie sticks, which, if you don't know, are 22-inch straws filled with flavored sugar.
Those are the only kind of straws I use. I get a drink, I bring out my pixie stick, dump the, sugar, in, and just go to town.
Can you imagine a grown-ass man, you get like a soda or something, and you pull out this huge...
Like, would you like a straw? I'm like, no, I got my own, girl.
It'd be better if you slurp it. So he had... As he distributed them, he told the kids that it was their lucky day as someone had come to the door and they were giving out expensive treats. He gave each child a pixie stick and gave one to the Bates' daughter as soon as they got home. The last pixie stick went to a trick-or-treat visitor who rang the doorbell of the Bates' house. After returning to the Bates home, they said their goodbyes, and the O'Brien family headed back to their nearby Deer Park house. Once back home, the kids were told they could each choose one treat to have before bedtime. Timothy naturally chose the largest, the giant pixie stick. He had trouble getting the sugar out of the straw. It seemed to be sticking. His dad helped him shake the candy up. However, Timothy took one taste before complaining of its bitterness. O'Brien gave him some Kool-Aid to help wash it down. And just moments later, Timothy began to cry out in pain. In an interview with the Associated Press, O'Brien said, quote, "It seems like it wasn't long before he was up and complaining his stomach hurt and he didn't feel good. He bent over vomiting and I was holding him when he just went limp." Less than an hour after eating the pixie stick, Timothy died while en route to the hospital.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
That took a turn.
It gets real. An autopsy was performed and it was found that Timothy's young body had enough cyanide in his system to kill 3 grown men. The pixie stick was examined.
How fucking hard did that kid go at that pixie stick? That's a lot of cyanide.
I'm saying that one pixie stick
had
enough.
Oh, he took out the whole thing? I thought you said that he like took a little bite and then
eating it off the top, but I'm saying they examined the stick and within it was enough cyanide.
Okay, I'm sorry. I thought you said within the kid.
No, within the pixie stick. It was examined. It was determined that someone had opened the tube, dumped out the contents, replaced the candy with poison, and then stapled the tube shut. O'Brien said, "We thought we were so careful. There isn't going to be any more trick-or-treating for us." Authorities quickly went to retrieve the other pixie sticks, as the parents said they had been given 5. 3 were recovered quickly. The 4th, the one which had been given to the boy who came to the door of the Bates' house, couldn't be located when called by police. The boy's parents searched frantically, then realizing their son could have eaten it already, they ran to his room to find the pixie stick in his hand. He had been unable to remove the staple and had fallen asleep trying. The 4 other pixie sticks were tested. All came back positive for cyanide. The pathologist who tested the candy stated that some of the sticks had enough poison to kill 4 adults. As word spread of Timothy's death, panic ensued. Parents came in droves to drop off Halloween candy to the police station, fearing that it too was laced with poison. Police questioned O'Brien about where he had gotten the candy and soon became suspicious when he said he couldn't remember. He then walked the neighborhood with a police escort 3 times before pointing out the dark house the kids had knocked on the door of. He said he could not get a good look at the man, but he had simply thrust the 5 pixie sticks at him, which he took for his kids. It was quickly discovered that the man that lived there, Courtney Melvin, was an air traffic controller who had been seen by more than 200 people at work Halloween evening. He had not been home. The police detectives decided to focus on O'Brien and his past and soon stumbled upon some interesting facts.
Twist.
O'Brien was about $100,000 in debt, had recently lost his house, and was about to lose his car.
All that money spent on cyanide, I understand.
It's expensive. He was also on the verge of losing his job at the Texas State Optical because his boss had found out he was stealing. A little more digging around, and the police found that O'Brien had been fired from 21 other jobs. Now for the cherry on top.
Haha, because candy related, I get it.
Thanks, babe. O'Brien had also taken out about $60,000 in life insurance on his 2 children. Cops concluded that he had been trying to poison the kids and collect the insurance payout. During Timothy's funeral, O'Brien's sister-in-law said that he was talking about using the insurance money to take a long vacation. Just days after his son had died, O'Brien was arrested for Timothy's murder. They were never... I can't really read tonight.
It's a tough
I'm
night.
I'm struggling.
It's okay.
They were never able to determine where O'Brien had gotten the cyanide from, but during his trial, which started in May of 1975, several witnesses testified that O'Brien had told them he wanted to get his hands on some cyanide and wondered how much of it would kill someone.
What? Listen,
he's
everybody.
He's not cool, bro. He's not being chill about
if
this at
all,
though.
If people are curious how much of a poison will kill someone, red flag.
Another witness testified that O'Brien had come into the wholesale chemical store where he worked and had asked about cyanide, but did not purchase any. He was tried for one count of capital murder and four counts of attempted murder for the other children. The jury took just 46 minutes to find O'Brien not only guilty, but worthy of the death penalty.
Damn.
It's Texas. They do not fuck around.
They don't fuck around.
Following this ruling, O'Brien's wife filed for divorce.
Yeah.
She later remarried, and her new husband adopted her daughter, Elizabeth. And the mom claims she never knew about the insurance policies her ex had taken out against the children. O'Brien fought his conviction, with his appeals going on for almost 10 years, all of which he lost. Throughout it all, O'Brien maintained his innocence. He was shunned by fellow inmates as he had committed crimes against children, and it was in prison that he got his nickname, the Candyman. On March 31st, 1984, O'Brien was served a last meal of steak, fries, peas, and Boston cream pie. He was then executed by lethal injection. While this was taking place, demonstrators stood outside the prison walls wearing Halloween masks and yelling, "Trick or treat."
I mean, I like that.
And that's the Candyman killer.
I should have killed him via cyanide.
What a terrible way to die.
Horrible. I feel like if you're married to somebody who tries to kill your kids, you kill that motherfucker.
But I also think in the initial aftermath of it, he played it off really well that it was poison candy and like...
Right. But he poisoned the candy.
Right.
And the cops knew that from the get-go,
basically. But I'm saying by the time
basically.
She figures out that it was her husband, she doesn't have an opportunity to kill him anymore.
That's why you gotta have people on the inside. You don't have people on the inside?
Of the inside of your family and your kids? What?
Yeah, I got people on the inside of my family.
I'm confused. So.
No,
on
the inside of what?
I'm not sure.
Where they're holding
him. Oh, I'm sure they had to keep him separated anyway because he killed a kid, and that's already like a big no-no.
My screen is bright.
It is actually a lot brighter. It's better for your eyes. You should turn that down.
I don't know how. There's no time. It's Halloween.
It's not though, but okay.
Boo. Good job.
Tell me a story.
Okay, so... thank you all. That's interesting.com, scarily.com, historyversushollywood.com, and USA Today.
Oh, shit.
I did a lot of research
basically
for this one.
Every website ever.
I did a lot of research because I was very
That's
curious
new.
About this one.
You didn't just ask a friend to tell you a story
I
so you could retell it?
Research. Work smart, not hard. Listen, before I get into this, I just want to let you know, this is going to scare the pants off you.
Well,
do
I'm
you
wearing
have
shorts,
underwear?
So I'm
on?
Ready.
Okay. So sit back, relax.
I could not be more relaxed.
I'm talking to the people at home.
Well, you just asked if I had pants on, so I'm sorry that I was assuming you were still talking to me.
In January 1971, the Perrone family moved to a 14-room farmhouse in Harrisville, Rhode Island. They needed a house this big because Carolyn and Roger Perrone had five daughters.
Jesus.
Yeah. That's the scary part.
That's the scary part, yeah. It will have nightmares.
The house had white siding, a 200-acre yard, and a creek in the back beside a barn that hadn't been used for years. They'd thrown their life savings into it, and it was perfect, or so they thought. You see, shortly after moving in, subtle oddities began to occur. Carolyn noticed it at first, a broom that wasn't where she left it. Though everyone denied doing it, it had been moved to another room.
It's a man on the wall.
There's no man in the wall.
No, I'm saying that's what happened in my story.
She put it back and noticed the next day that it had been moved again. One day, when the girls were outside playing, she heard the sound of scraping against the kettle in the kitchen. She walked in, but no one was there. There was a small pile of dirt on her freshly swept floor. Of course, this could all be explained by fibs that children might be telling.
Fibs.
But the girls swore they had nothing to do with it. And they, themselves, began to have strange encounters. Andrea, Nancy, and Christine Perrone, the eldest daughters, noticed cold spots in the house. The youngest, April, began to talk to a friend that no one else could see.
Nope.
And then came Roger's experience. Roger, the father, was born in Rhode Island. He was a regular, hard-working, mustachioed man of the 70s. One night, when the wind was whipping and with enough brutality to heave open the latched barn doors, Roger braved the coming storm to shut them. With a flashlight in hand, he trekked over the cold grass and approached the worn structure near the creek. But what he saw made him stop in his tracks. Feet dangling above the ground, young and without shoes. He slowly moved the flashlight up, chest heaving, terrified that it was one of his daughters that had taken her life. But it was a girl he'd never seen. Dark hair, clothing that seemed well out of place for this century, a violently broken neck that strained at an unnatural angle. The yellow glow on her face revealed deep scars, scratches, gashes across her skin. He called for his wife, looking back to the house for no more than a moment before returning his stare to the corpse swaying in the wicked night's gusts. When he did, her eyes were open.
Fuck that, I'm out.
The scars had vanished.
You would scream like a little girl, and you would run. No, I'm saying you specifically. I'm saying any grown man would, I feel like.
I wouldn't run. There would be too much shit in my pants. And she was staring directly at him. She was staring directly at him.
Oh my God.
Silent, unblinking, and suddenly unmarred. Bathsheba Thayer was also born in Rhode Island, though quite a bit earlier. Bathsheba, yeah. It was 1812. On March 10th, 1844, she married the love of her life, Judson Sherman. Bathsheba was 32 years old. She would be 37 when they welcomed their first son, Herbert. At this time, the farm, the same the Perrone family would move into more than a century later, was thriving. Everything was going well. That is, until Bathsheba's infant child died, or rather, was murdered. Bathsheba had allegedly driven a sewing needle into his skull.
Jesus.
Killing him with torturous pain. She stood trial, but there was no clear evidence that she had been the one who committed the atrocity. So the court cleared her of all charges. The townspeople, however, did not. They believed she was a witch and that Herbert was a sacrifice to the devil. Now, Bathsheba had already incurred the wrath of her neighbors, as she was quite stunning, a fact that many women in her town resented. After the death of her son, their spews of hatred became too much to bear. Bathsheba shut herself inside her farmhouse and refused to leave. Ever. In her depression and reclusion, she became wicked and cruel, taking out her frustrations on the help. Reports note that she both mentally and physically abused them. It would also be noted that she bore three more children. None lived past the age of four. As for her mental state, Bathsheba only got worse until her death at the age of 72 from what was reported as a strange kind of paralysis. They said that her body had simply turned to stone. Between Bathsheba's death and the Perrone's purchase of the home, eight generations of the Arnold family lived in the farmhouse. During that time, public records show that one person died by poison. There were two drownings in the shallow creek. A rape and murder of an 11-year-old by a farmhand occurred when he slit her throat. Four men froze to death, and two people hanged themselves. Something was provoking death at that farmhouse. The Perrone family went to the police after the incident at the barn, but the cops found nothing. And Carolyn, the mother, reported that she'd experienced strange pin-like stabbings in her leg, drawing blood, and that claim did not help validate their claims. The police turned them away, assuming that they were crazy or craving attention, but the hauntings didn't cease. In fact, they grew far worse. Everyone in the family began to actually see apparitions, not just one, but several. They were harmless at first, but slowly a stench of rotting flesh and burning took over the home as more sinister events began to unfold. They would smash objects, slam doors, break glass, even physically torment the children. It wasn't uncommon for beds to lift themselves and slam back down. The dirt-floored basement quickly became off-limits, as it seemed to be where the worst of it would occur. But as soon as they stopped going down, their furnace started going out, forcing one of the parents to head down and get it running again. The Perrones were terrified, but they couldn't leave. They had no money and knew no one would buy the house. They got in touch with the Warrens, a husband and wife team of paranormal investigators. Lorraine and Ed Warren's first trip to the house revealed nothing. In fact, they thought the Perrones were making it up. But the family was persistent and convinced Ed to continue coming back. At one point, he convinced his wife to hold a séance. It was during this ritual that everything changed.
That was quite.
Do you hear that?
The dramatic pause, the trickling of water.
Yeah, what is that?
From the apartment next door.
I've never heard that before.
I have, yeah.
Okay.
They're like taking a shower or something.
Scared the shit out of me.
All right. I know.
Carolyn Perrone.
Can I just say?
I mean, I have like two paragraphs left, but go on.
These stories are really hard. Because they're both obviously super fucking heavy. Like, I don't even know what to say. This whole story is just, like, very sad.
Okay. Carolyn Perrone became overtaken by the evil spirit. Possessed.
Which one is this? Sorry.
This is the mother.
The mother, okay.
Andrea, the eldest daughter, secretly watched as, quote, "My mother began to speak in a language not of this world, in a voice not her own. Her chair levitated and she was thrown across the room." Andrea would go on to say that she was so terrified she thought she was going to pass out. The mother of five's eyes were rolled back into her head and her skin was turning ashen. Ed wanted to do an exorcism, but Lorraine wouldn't allow it. They called in a priest who conducted the rites of exorcism and drove the violently vile demon from the thin, overtaken woman. What are you doing?
Just checking the time.
You want me to hurry up?
No.
After that, Roger Perrone demanded the Warrens leave, fearing more retaliation from the spirits if they continued. Shortly after their departure, the worst of the occurrences died down. The Warrens were in a hard spot financially, the Perrones were in a hard spot financially and ended up selling off all but 8.5 acres of their 200-acre land. Finally, in 1980, the Perrones were able to leave. The state of Rhode Island does not require full disclosure of supernatural entities to buyers.
Oh, shit.
In fact, the only thing the Perrones had been told when moving in almost 10 years prior was to, quote, "leave the lights on at night," something they didn't pay any mind to in the moment. Every single resident of that home has experienced some level of haunting. Some run, screaming, refusing to go back. Some, like the current owners, Norma Sutcliffe and her husband, stay. And just want to be left alone in the home to deal with things on their own. And that's the true story behind The Conjuring.
Nice.
Do you believe it?
No.
Really?
Stuff like that, for me, it's more something I feel like I need to see for myself to really believe.
But would you ever put yourself in a situation where you might see that?
Yeah, like if that house was like open and you could go like stay the night in it, I think I would try, yeah.
You would. Yeah. That's very brave of you. Okay. All right.
You wouldn't?
No, I would, but I would be fully expecting something to happen.
Well, I think that's why you would stay there in the first place. You're wanting something to happen.
Are you?
Yeah.
If something happened, would you continue to stay?
Fuck no. No. The second anything remotely suspicious, I'd be like, I believe, and I'd leave.
Would that change your entire life to have confirmation that there was something beyond?
No, I don't think so.
Okay.
You?
I mean, I believe there's something beyond.
That's what I mean.
Anyway,
I think most people do anyway. It's just to what extent that is, you know?
Okay. Well, happy Halloween, everyone. Please make sure to share, like, subscribe.
SJWpodcast.com.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that was heavy. So on that note, good night.
Sweet dreams.